call up Andy and Patrick and Matt Hall, whoever it is, for first enticing me into this project. It runs almost simultaneously with that 8 months of personal hell I call being interim department chair. It's really nice to think about something besides budgets with personal issues. I was also struck driving it from the airport yesterday, driving up Route 60 toward Versailles. That almost exactly 35 years ago, I was driving up that same road to interview for an internship at Kentucky Department of Library Archives. And I think if you told 24-year-old me that I would be in this hall 35 years later in the paper, I would assume you were drinking. So it's pretty neat to be. As Stuart said, I'm working now on a book about Civil War weather, so weather's the first thing I looked for when I started digging around in the website, and there's not much weather. And then I thought, well, I'll look at Perryville, because I've written about Perryville before, and maybe I can learn something new about Perryville. And there's not much there either. But when I expanded my search to neighboring communities like Danville and Harrisburg, I came across some affidavits and some other communication, which struck me as telling a really odd story, or to use Steve Gary's technical term, a really weird story. So knowing that a lot of you haven't seen the paper, let me really quickly tell you what happened in Harrisburg in September of 1865, and then I will try to tell you what I think maybe it means, although I'm hoping that all of you can help me with some other ideas about what the story could possibly tell us about Civil War and Reconstruction. The place to start is probably with the person who was at the center of this story. His name is John D. Hale. In 1860, he was 21. He called himself a merchant, although the census suggests that he probably wasn't a very good one. He had a wife and a small child, and he lived in Cornishville in Mercer County, which is sort of between Harrisburg and Perryville. It's hard to find much about him throughout the war. Clearly in 1862, he joined the Federal 9th Kentucky Cavalry. He was a lieutenant. He served about 4 months until he resigned. He may have resigned under a cloud that involved getting drunk and striking one of his soldiers. But just because he left the regular army does not mean that he left the Union cause, like a lot of other Kentuckians and a lot of other people in the war in general. He went into the bush. He pops up periodically in correspondence as a scout for George Thomas, Jeremiah Boyle, mentions him at one point. By 1864, he's clearly become the leader of the partisan of Unionists. In 1864, he's Captain Hale. By summer of 1865, people are calling him Colonel Hale. He's a fairly prominent Unionist. But what shall we call him? Guerrilla? Bushwhacker? Thomas Bramlett will later call him Desperado. The local police judge in Harrisburg, a man named Thomas Helen Parton, we'll talk about that in a minute, referred to him as a horse thief. Obviously, whether you were a thief or an idealist, it really depended on who was telling the story in Kentucky in 1865. The Confederacy collapses in the summer of 1865. And now all of these local men from Bluegrass, Kentucky, who fought for the Confederacy start coming home. They reconcile pretty quickly, it seems, with a lot of ostensible Unionists in central Kentucky. They become disenchanted with the Lincoln administration, primarily because of race, primarily because of emancipation, enlistment of black troops in 1864, 13th Amendment's very controversial in this room and across the hall. And so if you think about David Blight's discussion of reconciliation, it happens in Kentucky awfully during terms. And so here's John Hale, who had fought for the winning side, if we accept the traditional chronological end dates of the Civil War. But he's now outnumbered. He's in some trouble. And early in September 1865, A group of over a dozen men, later described as former Confederate soldiers and their veterans, kidnapped John Hale right off the streets of Harrisburg in broad daylight, not wearing masks. Everybody could see who they were. The local authorities, namely Judge Hartman, knew about it. He told him about it. He saw it happening and did absolutely nothing to stop it. So this mob dragged John Hale out to the countryside. What happens now is a little strange. They don't kill him. They talk a lot about killing him apparently, but in the end, they release him the next day. I suspect part of it had to do with him sobering up, because everyone had described him as drunk the previous day. And they actually cut a deal with Hale that if he would not prosecute them, they would let him go. He said, fine, went back into Harrisburg, but he was not done. At the moment when he was being seized by this mob, there was another guy on the streets. His name was Jefferson Robarts. He was a local farmer. And he was very enthusiastic about the idea of killing John Hale. He actually ran to a livery stable, grabbed a rope, and came back. Here's the rope. Let's do it right here now. John Hale was unhappy about this. He saw Jefferson Robarts. He followed him to a lawyer's office. Guns were drawn. Again, nobody was killed. The situation seemed to pass, except Robarts and Judge Hartman, it's hard to say who was actually calling the shots here, decided to arrest John Hale. Hartman swore out a warrant and gave it to the chief of police. Bear in mind, no one had been arrested or even sought for the attempted kidnapping and murder of John Hale. We're going to arrest John Hale now. Chief of police in Harrisburg, newly elected, was a unionist. His name is Doc Bowen. Here I think we can use some informed imagination. A few weeks earlier, a mob had tried to lynch and murder Doc Bowen. He had only escaped because his Confederate brother had shot two of them. He wasn't very enthusiastic. He went to arrest Hale. Hale said no. Bowen said okay. But it did not hurt that Hale was with the commander of the local garrison in Harrisburg. Earlier that summer, Harrisburg had been occupied by white troops, Ohio troops. I haven't been able to find out what regiment yet. But in September 1865, the small garrison in Harrisburg consisted of troopers from the 5th U.S. Colored Cavalry. Here again, I think informed imagination can help us understand what happens here. The 5th USCC was a Kentucky outfit that had been created down in Camp Nelson. It was the 5th USCC whose wounded and prisoners had been massacred at Saltville in 1864. Massacred at Saltville or on the campus of Emily College, where I was an undergraduate. They had been part of a second guerrilla massacre in Simpsonville, Kentucky at the end of 1864. And here they were in Harrisburg, a town where former Confederates and their supporters are increasingly taking power. We can imagine, I think, pretty easily how they must have felt besieged. We don't have their voices. We don't know what they were thinking, but we do know what their commanding officer thought. His name was William Bishop. He was a lieutenant from Michigan, like a lot of non-coms in the Army. He had gone into a USCC or CT regiment in order to become an officer. I think he was probably pretty idealistic as well. He was furious about what was happening, and he protected John Hale. Judge Hartman contacted Governor Bramlett. Governor Bramlett was furious about this abrogation of civil law. Hale should have been arrested. Hale got into an argument with the Army in Louisville. The Army investigated. The Army concluded that Lieutenant Bishop had done the right thing in protecting John Hale. The Army pulled Lieutenant Bishop out of Harrisburg. Did they pull out his men too? I don't know. That's one of the holes in this story. I think it's really important to find that out. But they took Bishop out of Harrisburg immediately and found him other jobs to do in and around Louisville. In part because Judge Hartman was now trying to drum up an unofficial lynch mob to murder John Hale, murder Lieutenant Bishop, and murder his black soldiers. Whatever happened immediately by the end of 1865, the 5th USCC was in Arkansas. The Army moved to So what happened after this? John Hale lived, but he did not stay in Harrodsburg much longer. By 1866, according to the Danville paper, Judge Lynch had made his appearance in Mercer County. There's a brief little story in the Danville paper about approving of Judge Lynch. Regulators frightened people, foreign agents fighting black in Mercer County. John Hale had been arrested for murder. He had escaped somehow, and he had fled. I tracked him down in the 1870 census in Missouri, where he was living by himself, not with his wife, not with his child, living in a hotel, managing a saloon. He died of tuberculosis in 1881. Judge Arden continued on as the police judge of Harrodsburg. Became a Republican at some point. In 1867, the men sitting in this chamber, in the chamber across the hall, passed legislation legalizing everything Judge Arden had done as police judge in Harrodsburg. Apparently there have been some questions as to how legal his actions had been. And of course the Hardens remained a rather important family. So what does it all mean? I have a colleague back in Auburn who just terrifies our graduate students. He always asks this question for them when he's on a dissertation committee. So what? Why do we care? Why do we care about John? Why do we care about this story? Does it tell us anything significant? I'm going to say just a couple of things that I think it tells us. First of all, everybody in this room has heard the old cliche that Kentucky joined the Confederacy in 1865. And I have problems with that statement. I'll talk more about that in a second. But I will say that we see in John Hale's story an example of that process happening. We see returning Confederates and friendly, local, lukewarm unionists abandoning the Union cause, abandoning emancipation, making common cause to control the town. And we see that. But I think it's a little more complicated. A lot of us in the field are starting to talk about this concept of a long Civil War. We all know that breaking up American history in 1865 was basically just done to facilitate class creation. And we all know that the Civil War didn't end in Appomattox in 1865. Nobody did really end in Durham Station. Maybe it did in Kansas, Texas, at Elmira Ranch. When did the war actually end? I was reading Greg Downs' book after Appomattox, and I was struck by a couple of things that Greg Downs points out. First of all, that Congress did not relinquish its war powers until 1871. And secondly, he does it very gently, but I think very powerfully. Greg Downs makes some comparisons to more recent history. The conventional war in Iraq ended in a few days, but the occupation and fighting after that conventional war continued to this day. Is that a better model for trying to understand the Civil War and the period after the Civil War? Does it help us understand Kentucky? I think maybe it does. John Hale lived. John Hale escaped his lunch money. Talked his way out of it, something happened. He ended up in Missouri. But in 1867, four other men were lynched by regulators in Mercer County. Between 1865 and 1870, 13 men were lynched in Mercer County. George Wright points out that if you take a map of Kentucky and you create a triangle, Richmond, Harrisburg, Danville, inside that triangle, that's the epicenter of regulator violence and lynching in post-war Kentucky. And all those victims were either African Americans or a little less commonly white Republicans. That's an insurgency. That's a long Civil War. Maybe not a war to establish an independent Confederate nation, but certainly a continuing violence to maintain Logan Street that way. And it was something that took place with the complicity of authorities, and not just Judge Harden, but you know, some of the ghost things from who essentially approved that one. I think John Hale's story points us in that direction, but it may point us in other directions too. So I'd love to know John Hale.